Lord have mercy. Please have his mercy. Lord have mercy. Please have his mercy. Na 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 na.
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. Please have his mercy.
Yeah,
Lord have mercy.
Mercy.
Please have his mercy.
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. Please have his mercy.
Yeah,
Lord have mercy.
Mercy.
Please have his mercy. Lord have mercy.
I found the one thing that no matter what your opinion is, no matter what your politics are, no matter what your perspective is, no matter where you came from, I found the one thing that we can all agree on. The one, I found it. Isn't that exciting? It's the only thing with all, everything, that I see on social media and everything that's being written down and everything that's being publicized and all the different stories all over the world, I found the one thing that everyone that sees goes, yep, that's true. And that is that Dr. Fauci cannot throw a baseball. No matter what you think about, it doesn't matter. Go watch him. He threw the first pitch out at the I think it was the Nationals game, and the dude went across his body and whipped it into the first baseline dugout. I mean, when you throw out the first pitch on national television that's going to be broadcast around the globe, you practice. Brother needs to practice some more baseball throwing. He can't throw a baseball. We found the one thing. This time of year, which is weird because typically baseball's already started, but now it's finally started. Baseball started. Sports are starting to come back to a certain level, and of course it's a really bad takeoff. I mean, as now I think two Big Ten teams are quarantining for however long they have to for football, and it's who knows what's going to happen. But they did start baseball. Yesterday I was talking with some neighbors about our favorite sports movies, and one of the ones we kept talking about was The Sandlot. You guys love The Sandlot, right? You're killing me, Smalls. Benny the Jet Rodriguez. It's an amazing movie about some kids that have their little park in their neighborhood, and they spend all their time playing baseball. And when it gets too hot, they go to the pool and check out Wendy Peppercorn, and they just have this amazing summertime experience, and they hit these baseballs over this fence that's in where they play baseball, the home run fence, and it happens to be in this guy's yard, Mr. Myrtle, who has this giant dog that they're afraid of. And if you don't know the story, it's classic. The one kid, Smalls, gets assimilated into the group of kids playing baseball, and he gets kind of welcomed in. He has no idea how to play baseball, but they teach him, and Benny the Jet teaches him how to play, and eventually starts to play. And one day they run out of money and they run out of baseballs, and he has this idea in his head to go steal a baseball from his dad's office, and he steals a baseball, and as you know, so spoiler alert, it ends up being a baseball that was signed by Babe Ruth, and he hits it over the fence. And he doesn't even know who Babe Ruth is. Some girl, he says. Whose name was on it? The Great Bambino. And this whole thing happens. They lose the ball. So then they have to go on this journey of trying to find this ball. And the whole point of them trying to find the ball is they're really afraid of Mr. Myrtle and the dog. They're just afraid that if they go in there, Mr. Myrtle's going to be really mean to them. They have this impression that he's this wicked guy that is scary. They don't want to be around him, so they have to sneak. And every time they try to get the ball, they do this crane thing where they lower people down. And it's a fun movie, and they try to get this ball with a vacuum cleaner. And eventually the dog gets out, and the dog chases them all around, and they end up back at Mr. Myrtle's house, and they have a conversation with Mr. Myrtle, who ends up being this ex-baseball player who was blinded by a baseball that hit him in the head. And he tells the kids that if they would have just come and knocked on the door, that he would have given them the ball the whole time. So they have this whole experience of playing in the sandlot. They're afraid to go over the fence. They lose a ball over the fence. They go through this crazy orchestration to try to get the ball. They don't really get the ball. When it all comes to the end of the movie, you meet the person that they're afraid of and find out that you have actually had nothing to be afraid of, and that this man is very, very kind, and that he actually played baseball with Babe Ruth. And so there's this whole great story that unfolds where you kind of learn that when they actually meet the guy that they were afraid of or that they don't understand, that he's nothing like they thought. And there's a little picture in that of who God is. All of us have this impression of who God is, but the more you get to know God, the more you understand how pleasant he is, how wonderful he is to get to know, and how he's probably nothing like you thought he was. And as we look into this idea, this word, this truth about mercy over the next 3 weeks, the context is really the doom scrolling that we all end up doing. A couple nights ago, I woke up like 4 a.m. and I just started scrolling through Twitter, and I saw someone use the phrase doom scrolling. And isn't that true? What we see online and in the news and in the world that we live in is this awful reality of the way that we're all interacting with one another. And this series is about how I think that the world needs a really heavy dose of mercy to bring into this doom scrolling reality that we're all experiencing. I see fear. I see fighting, I see canceling, and I see bitterness. And I see all of the people around me, and including me at times, not really, whatever your idea of mercy is, not really wanting to dole out mercy or kindness or forgiveness, but really kind of like a snake that's postured ready to bite if something bothers it. I feel there's an agitation in us, and I don't think it's just anyone. It's Christians and non-Christians and people of all different faith backgrounds that just feel tense. They feel bitter. They feel ready to attack. There's a sense in it. In the past 3 weeks, no joke, I have been chased down by 2 different cars. I was driving home from the gym, and my street that heads towards my house, it has 2 lanes that are at 55 miles an hour, and then right in front of the hotels, they merge into one. And I was driving, and I passed someone who was in the lane that merges, and they're not familiar with the area, but since I passed them and they realized they had to get over, they got mad. And I could tell they got mad because they were speeding up, and I was going normal speed, but they thought that I was chasing them. And really all I was doing was going normal speed, knowing I don't have to slow down, but they do. So then when they slowed down, they got behind me and they sped up and got right behind me. And I was like, oh man, they're upset. And I turned into where my neighborhood is and they put on their blinker. As soon as I put on my blinker, they follow me in. They turn into my neighborhood and they pull up behind me. And I was like, I stopped. I'm like, I'm not going to my house to show these people where my house is. And I'm like, they pull up next to me. There's 4 of them in the car. All the windows are rolled down. They start screaming at me. This lady goes, don't you know how to drive? And I'm just like, apparently not. Apparently not. Now, that was the second time I had been chased down, like someone had gone out of their way to follow me in their car. And some of you are going, dude, you need to work on your driving. And I probably do. But not much has changed except the context. And people are chasing me down. I just get this sense that people are full of this strife. And I think that we need like a word to help us move away from that. The brother of Jesus talks about this attitude that I want to unpack for us today in terms of mercy. He says, who is wise and understand? This isn't in on the screen, and you can look at this in your Bible, James 3, 13 through 18. It says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly. Listen to this. So if you harbor bitterness, it is earthly, unspiritual, and the brother of James says it's demonic. Harboring bitterness. Bitterness, strife, anger, the desire to strike when bothered, to pay someone back if they do something to you, the brother of Jesus says it's demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Lord, have mercy. We need mercy. We need the wisdom of heaven. We need something to untangle the web of our heart so that we move away from this posture of retaliation and striking and bitterness and anger and frustration and canceling and judgment and punishment and reaction, which is all I see, to a posture of even if they do that thing. Because they will. Even if they hurt me, even if they say something, even if they do that thing that presses my button, I have a different heart, and my heart is ready to not extend a reaction and a fight, but to extend love and kindness despite that. Now, that is a very radical picture of the way to live the human life. Very radical. It's very, very radical, and this is why this series struck with me, because when we talk about mercy, we're talking about something that is so counterintuitive to the human experience that it has to be divine. It has to be divine to actually, when someone wrongs you, repay them with goodness. Now, there's a central passage in the Bible where mercy is really unpacked. It's a passage that a lot of us know if we grew up in the church, Micah 6:8. And this is a passage of scripture that I'm going to look at, and we're going to base a lot of different parts of this series on. But Micah 6:8, the book of Micah is a book of warning. It's a book where a prophet named Micah, about 500 years after really... 400 or 500 years, we're seeing that the nation of Israel has done exactly the opposite of what God has called them to do. And they are rebelling against God. And Micah is showing up and saying to them that you are in trouble. At this time, the north and the south, Israel split with the north and the south, Israel in the north, and Judah in the south. And there's been 500 years of rebellion. And Micah is standing up to them and saying to them, you need to be warned or you're going to be in serious trouble. And he gives them some warnings throughout the book. He's talking specifically to the leaders because the leaders are actually ruling the people with theft and greed. They are stealing from people, even poor people, and taking away their land, which is against the Hebrew law. And you also have prophets that were in the land that are receiving money to tell people that God will protect them. So Micah is showing up and saying, you are turning your hearts away from God, you're mishandling the way you treat people, you leaders, and you are taking money from people saying that if they give you money, that God's going to protect them. And I'm here to tell you that if you don't stop what you're doing to these people, this is going to happen to the whole nation. And he gives this prophecy that the Assyrians are going to come in and destroy them. And then, even worse, Babylon's going to come in and take them into exile. And it's going to be a problem. And throughout the book, there's these warnings of don't do this, don't act this way. Here's what's going to happen. But there's these two sections in the book where God says, you know, here's what I want to do, and here's what ultimately I'm going to do, even though you turn your back on me. He tells them that he is going to be their shepherd, and he's going to put them all in a pen and bring them back from their exile, and he's going to bring them to a good pasture. And he also tells them that he's going to build them a new kingdom, and that he's going to bring a king to that kingdom. And in that passage, it says that that king will be born in Bethlehem, and that he will come and deliver them from their greatest problems, the heart condition that is causing all of these sinful behaviors. So that's the book of Micah. And ultimately, what we see in Micah 6:8 is God saying to the people, I want you to start to behave a certain way. I want you to start to act a certain way. I want you to start to be the kind of people who represent me instead of doing this awful treachery to the people that you're leading. It's time for you to start leading the people the way that I would lead the people. And so that's Micah 6:8. So then he's saying, this is what I've required of you. And what he's requiring of the leadership of Israel is them to start to transform into the way God will eventually lead them. And so he's saying, start doing now what ultimately the God of the universe does. And he says, so he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Now, when we're talking about mercy, you may have an idea of what it means. Like, you may have this thought of, I think we know what mercy is. One of the classic ways mercy gets described is to not give something to someone that they deserve, to withhold a punishment. To basically, so you're guilty, you deserve a punishment, and mercy is to withhold that punishment. That's a classic concept. But the root of mercy is a little bit more interesting than just withholding punishment. It actually is the concept of loyal love. Mercy in the Hebrew means loyal love. And the idea is that God is not only going to withhold punishments, certain punishments, for you that you deserve, but also that he's going to stay faithful no matter what you do to the promises that he gave you. So when you think about mercy, what you're thinking about is a God who has said, I have this path for you. I have this life for you. I have this ultimate plan for your life. And if you turn your back on me, you're going to cause some problems for yourself, but no matter what you do, I'm going to stay faithful with my love for you to bring you to a place that I told you I would bring you, even if you turn your back on me. Now, this is something that relates directly to not just a promise of God, which is big, because this whole passage is alluding to God's ultimate promise that he made to Abraham and said, I'm going to make a nation out of you, and through that nation, the entire world will be blessed, i.e. Jesus will be born and bring salvation to the entire world. That's the promise of God. But the promise of God is bigger than just a promise. The promise of God is a reflection of the character of God. It's a reflection of who God is. So God does not just make things up. Who God is spills out to his people. The more you get to know God, the more you get close to God, the more you start to experience who God is. Because God is a perfect being in that who he is in and of himself just is delivered to us, and everything that is delivered to us is exactly the way it should be. And one of the characteristics of God is this characteristic of loyal love or mercy. So to find out who God is, you have to start to explore the character of God. And so when we talk about Micah and it says that you are to love mercy, I want you to stop for a second before we look at how we're going to love mercy and think about if you love mercy. To love it. Isn't that almost an impossible idea? Just the way we're wired? Somebody offends us. Somebody does something that hurts our feelings. Somebody does something that we totally disagree with. We think it's wrong. And the God of the universe loves to do the opposite thing that you and I normally like to do when someone offends us. He doesn't just extend mercy and say, I forgive you and I'm going to stay faithful even though you hurt me. I made a promise to you. I mean, just imagine with our kids, right? Hey, if you listen and do this, I'll take you to the store. Today, my kids, they're wanting me to take them to go get these tins for Pokemon cards. And all weekend long, they've been saying, we're going to be good. And if they're not good, if they just don't listen, it's time to get in the shower. Get in the shower, put your shoes on, do whatever, just the basic stuff. You know, they don't listen, they just keep not doing it. Every single time they don't do what I want them to do, I want to withhold from them my promise. Every time, every single time, it is natural. So imagine, now these are kids not listening to their dad. Imagine someone hurts you. Imagine someone intentionally goes after you, attacks you. The God of the universe is called the Christian groupings of people, the gathering of the followers of Christ, to love to be kind to the people that aren't kind to us. To love it. To like rue, like, yes, this is amazing. I love it when someone's bad to me so I can be good to them, said no one. To love it is to almost ask for something bad enough to happen so that you get the opportunity to extend and watch God move. It baffles me. Love mercy. So the only way you're going to get into this love mercy thing is to understand that God doesn't just love mercy. God is love, and a part of his character is mercy. So we start to learn about the character of God all throughout the Bible. One of the most key passages for learning about the character of God, who he is, kind of what makes him up, like if he took an Enneagram test or if you were doing a personality assessment of God, the first one that you really see is in Exodus chapter 34, verses 6 through 7. And the background to this passage is you have Moses, who's on a mountain receiving the law from the people that he just, through the power of God, delivered from this 400 years of slavery in Egypt. And it's an amazing story. And he gets the Ten Commandments, and he's having this conversation with God. While he's having the conversation with God all throughout this section of scriptures, you know that the people who were just delivered from the evil Pharaoh, who, by the way, represents death, evil, and sin, the people being locked in this slavery of Egypt, they have these 10 plagues. They all represent like these horrible things that happen if you stay in sin or stay in Egypt. So it's like this very bad situation that represents what it means to not have God leading you. And all the people are experiencing these horrific things. And then through the power of God, they're delivered into the wilderness, but set free and heading to the promised land. You have the 10 plagues, and then God shows up. There's actually a correlation between the 10 plagues and the 10 commandments. It's like, here's the real bad way it looks. Here's the real good way it looks. So God is like showing them a better way to live life. He's telling them about who he is. And all the while, they've already started to worship a foreign god or this golden calf. You remember this? And God is already like, I already have enough reason to stop my promise to you. I already have enough reason to not, like, you guys, I brought you out. Like, you experienced sin and death and brokenness, and I brought you out of there miraculously, and I've given you, like, a new, like, way to live life through the law and through these leaders and this promise. And as soon as it takes too long, you start to worship a golden calf. And God is like, I have a good enough reason to withhold my promise from you. And then he says, but I want to tell you why I won't. And the reason he won't is because of who he is. It says this in Exodus 34. Now, this is such a powerful passage defining the characteristics of God. It's found in at least 20 other places throughout the Bible where God is being retold as who he is and what he's like. It says this, and he passed in front of Moses proclaiming, the Lord, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. That's the same Hebrew word right there. For mercy, faithfulness, or loyal love, mercy, full of mercy, maintaining love to thousands, And I'm going to read the whole thing because the Bible is more rich than we think, and I don't want you to think I'm leaving something out and letting it be contradictory. And forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of their parents in third and fourth generation. So it's kind of like him saying, doesn't it sound like God is saying, I'm going to be merciful to you because of who I am, but I'm also going to punish you? If you see it, actually what's going on is what he's saying is worshiping idols will always cause you trouble, i.e. Micah. You're going to get yourself in trouble. You keep doing things you're not going to do, that problem is going to revisit you and revisit you and revisit you for generation, 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 Micah. People worshiping false gods, God saying this can't happen anymore. It's the same thing as before. But he says, I am going to maintain my faithfulness and my mercy to what? Thousands. And the indication there is that even though you do the things that cause trouble for you, I am going to keep my promise to you, even though you keep getting yourself in trouble. Now, as a parent, doesn't that make perfect sense? You know, hey, go play, go do your thing. If you do that thing to that kid and it causes you trouble, you're gonna be hurting. You're gonna be in trouble. That's gonna cause you problems. You break the rules, and the rules are gonna cause you problems. But I will love you. I will continue to pay for your shoes. I will continue to put food on the table. I will continue to love you. I will continue to lead you to hopefully a promised land to become a good citizen and do whatever it is that I've promised that I would do, even though you go out and break the rules. The characteristics of God. So oftentimes we think of God as this angry man behind a fence that we don't want anything to do with. And when we get to know him, we go, oh man, not only do I bask in his favor regardless of my decisions because I'm his child, but I want to stop doing the things that cause me trouble. This is the idea of Exodus. Stop doing the things that cause you trouble because you have a God who's going to fulfill his promise even if you cause trouble for yourself. And when you cause trouble for yourself, I'm going to come and fix that too. So God's plan in all of this with Micah, he has told you, oh man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly, is a picture of God transforming us into beings of his character. God's plan for humanity until Jesus comes back and resurrection happens for all of his followers is for us to, in the process, be transformed into beings who emulate the character of God, specifically today and with this series, the character of mercy. God's character realized in us is what our world needs. Isn't it? What type of domino effect happens when somebody hurts us, somebody comes towards us and brings pain towards us, offends us, or whatever it is, and our reaction is attack. Our reaction is to snap. It's bitterness. It's envy. It's strife. What does that do in the world we live in? It just adds insult to injury. What does mercy do in the world? It stops the pattern of brokenness. It turns the other cheek. It changes the trajectory of a family. It changes the trajectory of a generation of people. When God's character becomes our character, then we care about the world the way that God cares about the world. We start to care about it. Could I say that mercy is an extension of your heart for people? If you really love people, then you don't just love people when they show up perfect. You love people when they show up broken, and you get excited to extend mercy to them. Because when you extend mercy, isn't this crazy? You take the brunt. You take the hit. You get hurt. And in the process of you getting hurt, you get to manifest the presence of God. And so as Christ followers, there's a whole picture here of us going through a certain level of pain in order to bring the beauty of God into the world that we live in. Mercy lives in the context of brokenness. Just like in Micah, when God says, but I will be your shepherd, and you can go read that passage. It's only six chapters all, Micah, I think six chapters, and there's a whole section that talks about God being a shepherd and putting all of his sheep in the pen and then breaking open the pen and leading the way for the people back into the city. You see, what happens is we're supposed to be transformed into shepherds. Shepherds who dole out the nourishment of mercy to a world around us that needs forgiveness in order to have hope. We become shepherds by handling and handing out mercy to nourish the flock. Sometimes it's hard to put these sermons into words enough that they resonate, that they make sense. And as pastors, we often try to find applications for you guys that you can go, take this, how do you bring mercy into the world? And nothing is more powerful than a true story of mercy. So watch this video.
We end this week with a lesson in forgiveness from Steve Hartman on the road.
It all went down on this block in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Back in 05, Jamel McGee says he was minding his own business when a police officer accused him of and arrested him for dealing drugs.
You saying the officer made it up?
Yeah, it was all made up.
Of course, a lot of accused men make that claim, but not many arresting officers agree.
So you phonied the report?
I did. I falsified the report.
This is former Benton Harbor police officer Andrew Collins.
Were you just trying to chalk up an arrest?
Yeah, basically, the start of that day, I was going to make sure I had another drug arrest.
And in the end, you put an innocent guy in jail?
Correct. Yeah.
You lost everything.
I lost everything. My only goal was to seek him when I got home and to hurt him.
Really?
That was my goal.
Eventually, that crooked cop was caught, served a year and a half for falsifying many police reports, planting drugs, and stealing.
Of course, Jamel was exonerated, but he still spent 4 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Today, both men are back here in Benton Harbor, which is a small town. Maybe a little too small.
Hey guys, thank you.
Last year, by sheer coincidence, they both ended up at Mosaic, a faith-based employment agency where they now work side by side in the same cafe.
Oh, excuse me.
And it was in these cramped quarters that the bad cop and the wrongfully accused had no choice but to have it out.
And I said, honestly, I have no explanation. All I can do is say I'm sorry.
And Jamel says that was all it took.
That was pretty much what I needed to hear.
Today, they're not only cordial.
Saturday, we went to the trampoline park.
They're friends.
You know, we talk about life.
Such close friends. Not long ago, Jamel actually told Andrew he loved him.
And I just started weeping because he doesn't owe me that. I don't deserve that, you know?
Did you forgive for his sake or for yours?
No, for our sake. Not just us, for our sake.
Jamel went on to tell me about his Christian faith and his hope for a kinder mankind. He wants to be an example. So now he and Andrew give speeches together about the importance of forgiveness and redemption.
Grab this, we'll set it over there.
And clearly, if these two guys from the coffee shop can set aside their bitter grounds, what's our excuse? Steve Hartman, on the road, in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
And that's the CBS Evening News for tonight.
For our sake. Powerful words, for our sake. Every time you extend mercy to someone, you manifest the presence and the characteristics of God. And when you bring that into your interaction, when you bring that into your conversation, when you bring that into your family, when you bring that into your work, when you bring that into your conversations, whatever it is to your neighbors, when you bring that in, you bring Jesus into the world. And I'm going to continue to talk about this over the next couple weeks, but one of the things that we're going to talk about is how when you love the mercy that you've been given, you will start to love to give it. What happens in people's lives is they experience Jesus in a real way. Sometimes it takes some fatal flaw. Sometimes it takes some bottomed out moment where horrible things happen and you've done something so palatable, so real, so material that when you realize Jesus forgives you, it changes you so much when you feel that forgiveness that you feel such a release and such a love and such an embrace that that experience and that truth becomes something that you long to give away to other people. You should want mercy and what it has done to you to be done to the world around you. So next week, I'm gonna start off and I'm gonna talk about one of the most famous passages, a parable about mercy that Jesus describes. And we're gonna start to look at the process of how our hearts can be transformed so that our lives can exhibit the characteristics of mercy and ultimately our Father in heaven. Let's take a minute and let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your mercy, for your loyal love, your commitment to us no matter what, your extension of mercy and forgiveness into all of our lives. And as we look in the mirror and see our need for forgiveness, we experience you more richly than ever before. Father, thank you so much that you died for us while we were sinners, that your whole life on earth was about mercy and stepping into a space, and that it just was the incarnation of your character, who you really are. Father, I pray that we would make a difference, start a ripple effect. Help every person in here to look at this story that we just watched and think about it, compare it to whoever they're bitter towards, whoever they're holding a grudge towards. And if you can't find a way, God, help them to realize what you've done for them and how you bringing mercy into the world makes the world more like you. We love you, Jesus. We thank you for the opportunity to think about you and who you are, worship you, and be together in the name of Jesus. We love you. Amen.
Joel is absolutely an awful driver. He is awful. He is terrifying. He's off stage, but where's Carmen? Is Carmen in here right now? Where's any staff? Give me an amen right now if Joel's a bad driver. He's terrifying. I mean, I could tell you stories, but they'd be stories where, like, you had to be there to get it, and thank God that you weren't, because they were terrified. There's been many times where the staff has been in his church and screamed in his vehicle because we were terrified and scared to death. But with that being said, I want to thank you, say thanks to Jake Bame for hanging out with me beforehand. We are going to do that. We're going to try to do that little pre-show thing every Sunday. So if you're out there and maybe you have a business or maybe you just want to talk and introduce yourself to the church, I'd love to talk to you if you had a chance to see the interview. It's very normal. We're not going to play, unless you want to, any silly games. I'm not going to do anything to make you look goofy. It really is just to get folks to know other folks here at 514. We don't even have a name for it yet. I'm thinking, I just came up with this as I was walking to the stage, maybe we call it 513. Kevin liked it. We'll go with that. One person, I can tell his laugh. But seriously, get hold of me. David@StuffDavidDoes or David@514Church is how to get hold of me. I would love to talk to you in front of everybody and have some fun. Second announcement real quick. Kids camp is postponed. It's postponed. just postponed because we know things are going to get better. And we don't know exactly when we'll reschedule it, but it will be rescheduled. And it's ready to go. Kaylee and Daniel and everybody's got it ready to go. It will happen. So for now, though, it is postponed just for safety reasons. You get what's going on there. And then last but not least, if you're new, we'd love to talk to you. If you're new to this building, whether if you're a 514 person, where's Scott Haynes? Scott, are you in here? Scott, I saw on Facebook, I don't know where, there you are. You mentioned that today was your first day in the building. What do you think? Is it awesome? We are so stoked. I mean, we've been back for a couple months now, and every day, I drove past the school today. I'm like, oh, as nice as it was that we had a place to gather, it's nice that we're going to our own building. So if you're new to 514 and have never been here before, we'd love to get to know you. We have a number up here. You can text hi if you don't want to talk to anybody, or if you'd love to come out and say hey to us right outside here, the big wall that says We Are the Light. We'd love to talk to you right now. Just say hi and introduce ourselves. Other than that, have a great week. We absolutely love you guys. Thank you, Melanie. Thank you.